is 7 o'clock. We'll call to order the April meeting for the Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. Glad everybody is here. Welcome. First item on the agenda is the adoption of the agenda. Does anybody want to make a motion to adopt the agenda?
Move we accept the agenda as printed.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, approved. Next item is the approval of the meeting minutes. Let's take a minute and go through that.
There's two sets of minutes.
Oh, there's two sets of minutes. Okay, we have the February 6th regular meeting. Let's go ahead and look at that one first. Anybody have any recommended change for the February 6th regular meeting? Is there a motion to approve?
I make a motion to approve the February 6th.
Okay.
Second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Let's go ahead and look at the March 20th special meeting minutes.
Move to accept.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, passes. Public comments. We had one person sign up. Steve McCurry. And you had a concern about meeting date. Oh, okay. Let's see, that's number 8 on the agenda. That's a little bit later, but we've heard your comments and we'll... John, there you are. You won't be here for May?
I'll play while I'm speaking to you guys. But
okay, so when we get to that item. Okay, all right, all right. We're pretty good about accommodating, making sure everybody's here. So, anybody else for public comments? We'll go ahead and close that, hearing none. Old business is number 5. The first thing on the agenda is the downtown mixed-use overlay district. I was assigned to do some research, and I actually did a fair amount of research. I looked at about 20 to 30 different overlay districts that are related to, I think, what we're trying to accomplish here. I put together a very quick PowerPoint there. Sit up.
Maybe you did.
There it is. Okay. Again, the charge from the council, I think every time that we talk about this, I'll go ahead and put the charge for the council up there. But the assignment that I kind of gave myself, or the commission assigned me, was to do some research and get us started on this process. So that's what I'd like to talk about tonight. So let's go to the next slide. All right. So anyway, kind of key issues. As it says here, I reviewed about 10 overlay districts a couple of months ago, and then about 20 in the last week or so, and found a lot of different, very, very interesting things, and obviously a wide variety of stuff. But probably the most important are the bullet points that I've raised here, and most relevant to, I think, what we're trying to do here in Curie Beach. And the most common in terms of what you see out there in terms of overlay districts are what are called historic overlay districts. And these are actually oftentimes called character preservation overlay districts. And that's really, I think, what we're trying to achieve here. In fact, I would kind of recommend that we refer to what we're thinking about as the business character preservation overlay district rather than calling just an overlay district, because that's really what we're trying to achieve according to the council's assignment there. For example, and I think Raleigh actually is a very good model. They have a number of different overlay districts. They have 8 different historic overlay districts. They do refer to these as character preservation overlay districts. After having looked at probably a good 15 overlay districts, and particularly looking at the historic overlay districts in North Carolina, and I looked at a couple in Massachusetts and one or two in California too. But the majority were in North Carolina. The standard way of doing that, not always, but I would say probably 90% of the time, is what is called a certificate of appropriateness, or a COA type of process. And so any building or renovation in the character preservation overlay district is essentially managed by a certificate, or I'll just call it a COA, which would be a COA. And in Raleigh and very large cities like Charlotte, there's actually a separate board. It would be a COA board that would be responsible. The smaller communities, the Planning and Zoning Commission would act as the COA board. And they're the ones that issue the COA upon application for major COAs. So if somebody's doing something major in this district, they would have to come. And I'll talk about that in a second, because I have a table to show you from Raleigh. That they would come to the Planning and Zoning if we're designated as a COA. Minor COAs, just little minor things, let's say fixing up a window or something like that, would just simply be issued by staff. And that's standard. All these towns that use, and all these cities that use a COA type of process, do exactly the same type of process right here. One of the things that we would need to do is define the difference between what constitutes a major and a minor COA. Because again, if it's a major one, it would come before the board. If it's a minor one, then staff would simply issue the COA if they're satisfied with it. The review of the COA application is based upon the written guidelines. So inevitably, there's going to be written guidelines about what is appropriate and what is not appropriate within this overlay district. And the board actually must issue findings that the COA is consistent not only with the guidelines that are established by code, but also the intent of the overlay districts. And several of them actually have that built within it. Generally what I saw, and again, Raleigh's a very good example, a chart that designates the types of minor innovations or building sort of things and major, and the process of a review. So the next slide here, it's probably pretty small to read, but this, for example, is the chart out of Raleigh. And again, it's hard to see, but you say that there's staff review, which is minor work, and the Certificate of Appropriateness Committee. Again, they have a separate committee, but our recommendation is the P&Z would act for right there, whether there's review or no review and all that sort of thing. So you can see that construction of a new primary structure would require the board to review that. But if you go down and look at the alteration of an accessory structure with expansion of the building footprint, that could be done simply by the staff. So one thing that we would have to do, and again, I think it's already done in a lot of these cities, so it's pretty much taking what's already done, is simply define what a minor improvement is, and staff would then issue the COA, and what a major improvement would be, which is where it would have to come before the board. So again, this is just an example of how Raleigh does it. And I think Raleigh, of all the ones I saw, and I looked at Charlotte, I looked at a lot of other ones, I looked at small towns, large towns, Raleigh seemed to have, even better than Chapel Hill. I thought Chapel Hill would have and they do have, again, the historic type of overlay, but I think Raleigh has the cleanest way of managing this type of process.
Did you look at Cary?
Yes, I looked at Cary. I looked at Cary. I looked at Chapel Hill. I looked at Raleigh. I looked at Charlotte. I looked at a few small towns. So probably about 15 communities within North Carolina, as I looked at. All right, let's go to the next slide. All right, all of these have design guidelines. One of the things I did find is that some overlay districts limit the use in the overlay. So, for example, they would say, well, within the overlay district, you can't have this activity. I think we talked about that with Myrtle Beach last time. Myrtle Beach and their overlay is limiting certain type of uses. You can't have this use, you can't have that use, and stuff like that. I did find several that also limited uses within the overlay. A lot of the other overlays simply said that the use is designated by the underlying zoning map, and so the concentration was simply on design type of issues. So again, one of the things we can look at is whether we want to limit uses or define uses in addition to design issues for what we're looking at, or simply allow the underlying zoning map to define the use within that overlay district, and we just simply concentrate on design type of issues. These things can be very complicated or very simple. There are some that, some had 80 pages of design stuff in it, and some had 4 pages of design things. And again, one of the issues I think is opposed to the council here is to what extent we have to have detail versus keep it relatively broad. Design guidelines tend to focus primarily on building exteriors. That there are some that talked about the back of buildings, the side of buildings, and stuff like that, but the vast majority simply concentrated on the building exterior, particularly the front exterior, because that's, again, what people see and what you're trying to preserve in terms of the character. The five things that generally you tend to see is a definition of the materials that can be used, the paint and the paint colors that can be used, what the storefronts would look like. And again, I've got some examples, some maybe of architectural features associated with the storefront, and then what the roofs would look like. So those are kind of the five big things that these design type of overlay districts tend to look at. One thing you continuously see is the emphasis on consistency, that when it's reviewed and a COA is issued, that any new building or any renovation or anything like that has to be consistent with the surrounding type of areas. Again, trying to create that, preserve that character. That's why they call it a character preservation type of overlay. Again, I've got three examples here. I've already talked a little bit about Raleigh's non-residential guidelines, Chapel Hill's historic district overlay. And I went to Massachusetts and found a small town up there, Bolton Mixed Use Village Overlay, just very quickly. Let's go to the next one. All right, this is, and if anybody's interested, I'll be glad to send this out. The link is right there. This is the design guidelines for Raleigh. It's about 80 pages long, and I thought, oh my goodness, we're not going to do 80 pages. But what they've done is they're looking at eight different historic districts, and their historic districts also cover a lot of residential areas. So about 90% of this design guidelines in here are dealing with residential type of things. And there's only a few pages that actually deal with storefronts and commercials. And what I have right there, and again, this is pretty small, obviously, is storefront guidelines. It's only one page long. It's only one page long in terms of what the guidelines would be like for storefronts. There is reference to a couple other areas in this. For example, there's reference that they have to follow the paint, and the materials. So you'd go back into the materials, and it allows a certain type of materials and so forth. But the actual storefront guidelines is only one page long in the Raleigh example right there. If you've knocked down a building or if you build a new construction, non-residential, they have another half page related to that. So this is really, when you look at the 80 pages of guidelines in Raleigh, of which 90% has to do with residential, these are really the only two pages that directly address the storefront, the commercial activities, and that sort of thing. Again, with reference to materials, you have to follow the material standards, the color standards, and some of those type of issues. But if anybody's interested, I think this is a really good one. And what they've done is they've put together their design guideline to capture all eight of their historic districts. So all eight of their historic districts have to follow these type of guidelines in terms of references. And again, that's one reason why it might be perhaps a little bit longer, because they're trying to capture everything. All right, let's go to the next one. Chapel Hill. If anybody's interested, there's the Chapel Hill Historic District. And again, just pretty much, and again, they do the same thing like Raleigh does, is they have some standards, really not that complicated. But any exterior portion of any building or other structure, including masonry walls, fences, fixtures, et cetera, or any above ground utility structure, or any type of outdoor advertising requires a certificate of appropriateness. So again, Chapel Hill uses the same COA type of process that the vast majority uses. Before it can be erected, altered, restored, moved, demolished, et cetera, if located in the overlay district, the historic district right there. Ordinary maintenance or repair of any exterior architectural feature that does not involve a change in design, material, or outer appearance typically does not require a COA. And again, there's references. So again, basically the same sort of thing. Chapel Hill uses a COA process. I don't know if their planning and zoning is their COA board, or if they have a separate COA board. I think planning and zoning is their COA board, but I'm not quite sure about it. All right, let's go do the next one, which is Bolton, Massachusetts. Again, pretty small print right there. And this I thought was kind of interesting. They use, and I wanted to get an example, although probably 90% of what I saw throughout the United States, not just in North Carolina, uses a certificate of appropriateness for their character preservation overlays. A few of them do use the SUP type of process. the special use permit process. And this is one that uses special use permit versus a COA. Their planning and zoning does the special use permit. So again, basically the same sort of thing as they have an overlay for their historic district that they want to preserve. But there, rather than getting a COA, you have to go and get a special use permit. What I saw is that people use the COA because it simplifies the process. Special use permits tend to be more complicated, require a number of different steps and all that sort of thing. But the COA seems to be more of a really trying to capture the process that might take place within these overlay districts. This one does also, as an example, limits the uses in addition to design. But what I think is very interesting is that they do have design guidelines. But these are the findings that the Planning and Zoning Commission has to make in terms of determining whether to issue a, in this case, a SUP versus a COA, but it'd be the same sort of thing within this historic overlay district. And you see a lot of issues related to harmony, consistency, you know, all that sort of thing. The design standards are relatively simple in this one. And the reason I'm kind of pointing this out is I think this raises a very interesting issue for council to kind of respond or think about, is that in North Carolina, how specific do we need to be in terms of our design standards? Can we keep it relatively broad and just have the commission then, based upon findings that it's consistent and kind of in a more of a discussion point of view, issue the COA or not issue the COA, or do we have to have very, very specific guidelines specifying materials, colors, et cetera, like you know what I mentioned with Raleigh. This one does not seem to have very complex. They really rely upon the planning and zoning to make the decision as to whether the renovation or whether the new building is consistent with what the intent is for this particular overlay district. One of the things I did find, and one of the things that we'll have to talk, is I concentrated simply on commercial buildings here. If we're going to try to capture within this overlay district residential, then you have a whole bunch of different type of design issues that have to be dealt with and incorporated into this. So what I did is I simply captured what these cities were doing and these towns were doing related to more commercial or business type of activities. And the last slide I have here is simply the map for the town of Carrot Beach, different districts. So anyway, my recommendation is that we kind of move along the lines of calling this a character preservation overlay district. That's really what we're trying to do. And that because everybody seems to be going towards a more efficient approach, which is a certificate of appropriateness process, that's what we want to do also, is do a COA type of approach here. I mean, that's certainly what the towns and cities in North Carolina is doing, is a COA. And that we ask our attorney to kind of give us some guidelines as to how specific we need to be in terms of the design to kind of fall under North Carolina laws, or whether we can keep it kind of nebulous and broad and keep kind of the decision-making process in terms of more consistency and appropriateness and that sort of thing with the P&Z. And then I guess the last thing we need to talk about is whether we want to go outside the B1 and kind of capture some other areas that may have commercial activity with this overlay district.
Chairman, I've got some questions.
Sure.
Really appreciate the your research and your presentation. You taught me some things. I'm not aware of the COA process. But some fundamental things come to mind, and I want to know what you found about these things when you were looking at what you presented. The COA process versus a special use process does not seem to focus on controlling use. For example, if you had a COA process that was primarily oriented towards design guidelines, could a McDonald's come in to your district, and as long as it met the design guidelines, that use is permitted?
Yes. The COAs that I found, and that's a good point. I kind of touched on that. The COA process concentrates on design, what it looks like, rather than uses. And so all the reference that I saw is that the use is determined by the underlying zoning characteristics. So McDonald's would come in, but if you have a COA, it would have to fit, the design of it would have to be appropriate. So you could regulate drive-through, you could regulate the type of sign, you know, that If you didn't want golden arches, you know, it had to be another type of sign. The colors, the materials, the storefront, and that sort of thing. So you couldn't restrict a restaurant, but you could restrict what that restaurant looked like, including the drive-through characteristics, because that's an external thing.
I think one of the things this commission needs to keep in mind, therefore, is COA controls design primarily. But if you're concerned about the uses coming in, you may want to consider a special use permit process.
That's one thing you might want to do a little bit of research on, because I didn't check on that. That's not one of the things I looked at as to whether, because one could call an appropriateness maybe a use as an appropriateness characteristic, but I just don't know whether they're using the COAs, if there are any COAs out there that also define or regulate uses. The one in Massachusetts used an SUP, but they regulate uses.
Yeah, I think we need to look at that, but my gut feeling is that an SUP process is going to control what uses comes in more effectively than a COA. But I have two more questions. Under the special use permit approach, the deciding body has discretionary authority to impose reasonable conditions. I don't see where the COA process lends itself to imposing conditions. In other words, you meet the guidelines, which I think, therefore, for COA, needs to be very detailed. But under the COA process, it's kind of like a subdivision plat. If you meet those guidelines, you get the COA. If you want to be able to control certain aspects of that use, I think the SUP process is going to lend itself to that, since by statute the deciding body can impose conditions. Did you see anything about the authority to impose conditions with an approval under the COA process when you were doing your...
I didn't look at that. I can't say. I would certainly recommend getting into the Raleigh. Because Raleigh seems to be the most sophisticated in terms of doing that, and they also have a whole section on the process, the application, the process, and you could see if they do regulate certain things like, you know, the hours that something could be open and all that sort of thing.
All I'm doing with these questions is trying to make the commission aware of what each different process can do, but they may not all be able to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Control use, impose conditions. Another thing that I wondered about when you were discussing Raleigh, we've got the general statute prohibition. I think it's single and duplex only. I have to go back and check that on exterior design guidelines or requirements for residential.
Right.
I thought I heard you say that Raleigh was very heavy on the COA design guidelines for residential, and I wonder how that
they is. All are. All of these are historic districts, and so evidently through the COA process, and we've talked about that particular ruling, in these historic districts, there seems to be still an ability to control what those exteriors look like, and through the COA process.
There is a loophole in that statute regarding the developer's consent, so maybe it's done that way. But what I would recommend, if the commission wants to move forward, and I think we ought to hear from Mr. Batson as well, but if the commission would desire it, I'd be glad to look at the Raleigh with you providing me the link.
Sure.
And try to look at some of these concepts that we've just been discussing, because I think they're important. I like the approach, streamlined and efficient. But these other issues, I think, are relevant to that discussion as well.
Yeah, and certainly one of the things, I kept coming back to Raleigh, because Raleigh, and I thought some of the other ones would be a little more sophisticated, but Raleigh seemed to be the most sophisticated. And I know that this still continues on, because they just added a historic district in February of this year. It used to be 6. I think they added one in December. They added one in February. So they're adding additional character preservation overlay districts throughout these different areas within Raleigh.
I think it's a great
very, very
line
recently.
And we need to look at it. I want to ask, can you hear me, Tim? Okay.
Okay. Are there any, is there any discussion or, you know, our next step or anything like that?
Well, I want to say that I think based on my walk around that I did in the community and when I went to look at all of our permitted uses in the various zones that are in this area beyond the B1 district, and that gets us to the B1, B2, RA2, and RA3. There are a lot of overlaps in permitted uses. So if we restrict this to B1 only, then someone can go and put absolutely anything that's not consistent with what we've done in B1. And I think we need to look at a wider scope.
Okay.
No, I agree with that. I think that we've got, there's not many, but we've got several businesses that are outside of that.
Yeah.
And the footprint should be a little, should be not just the B1. The footprint ought to be determined by what we think that the, you know, the COA process would easily cover.
What happens to the homes that are in those outside districts that were not businesses?
They're nothing.
They're not going to be limited in any way?
No, because we can't do anything with the council on, we can't do anything with the exterior changes on that. It's not a historical district. It's just a residential district.
The fact that it's historical or not is irrelevant.
Okay.
The concept is overlay.
Right.
But as I was just discussing with the chairman, there's a disconnect. I have an intellectual disconnect given the statute's prohibition against residential guidelines and Raleigh's heavy emphasis on residential guidelines. That's why I suggested that some additional research may be necessary to get to the bottom of that.
You know, maybe we can pose a question to the commission to discuss as to whether we want this overlay just to deal with commercial, or let's say non-residential construction. Or whether we want to try to capture, like Raleigh is doing, both commercial, non-residential, as well as residential. And remember that it's kind of an interesting thing because somebody could come in and buy a residential piece of property. And let's say we have a COA that's designed just for commercial or non-residential. If they knock down that old residential property and try to build a commercial or non-residential building, the COA would kick in, so we could
right.
regulate that. One of the issues the council was raising is interesting, is somebody coming in and buying a, where there's a commercial property, let's say a hotel or a motel or something like that, I'll knock it down and put it into residential. If we don't capture residential, then they could go ahead and do that, and we wouldn't be able to control that under the commercial-oriented COA, unless we include residential within it.
And I think one thing you need to focus on is the building trend now, because we have a limited footprint that the ocean continues to take away from us, but is to have commercial type businesses on the ground level and then residential businesses, much like they've done in part of Mayfair, in the upper levels. And so I think you've got to...
That's one of the things that we could talk about, and that's clearly one of the things that is going into a lot of these things, is what's called a mixed use.
Right.
You know, so you have that
like that now.
We have it up K.
Right.
But would we want to extend the mixed use overlay also into, can we have two overlays? Can we have like a B1 overlay that's a design and then extend the K over into that which would allow mixed use?
The General Assembly has given this town the authority to do whatever it wants to do.
Okay.
We draw the map. One comment about residential, if you're talking about mixed use, with multifamily on top of commercial, the prohibition in the statute against aesthetic design guidelines doesn't apply.
Okay.
Now, I would suggest, if the commission is interested, I don't mind looking at Raleigh and bringing back my findings and conclusions next month as to the COA's ability to control use, the COA processes, authority to impose conditions and the design guidelines, because I think that would further our discussion about
what
way you all want to go.
And also to add that, how specific we need to be in our guidelines, whether it needs to be very, very specific or we can leave a little bit of flexibility in interpretation.
Well, that gets to another key point. If you go general so that you've got wiggle room when approving, then you're getting right into quasi-judicial. Because that's discretionary decision-making, not legislative decision-making. And if you're going COA to avoid quasi-judicial on special use permits, but you make it, give yourself wiggle room and discretionary authority under the COA, you're just back where you started.
Okay. So if you could look at that, I think that would be great. And what I would recommend then is that you know, the people that are interested in maybe going beyond the B1 is really seriously thinking about actually what that map would look like. You know, if we're going to go beyond B1 in terms of trying to capture an overlay, what that would look like if we're trying to go beyond the B1 district. We also think whether we want to try to regulate the residential, because Raleigh is regulating the residential. I mean, there's no question about that.
And
so is Chapel Hill, and so are all the other ones through these overlay districts.
That's a puzzle right now, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah. But certainly, there's no question the COA process can regulate, as well as the SUP can regulate the commercial or non-residential. And I think it could be done relatively simply. I think that you need to have materials, a definition of materials, definition of colors, and then pretty much have what Raleigh has done in terms of recommendations about what the storefronts would look like and architectural things would look like. So it's not as complicated as I originally thought it would be, I think.
Yeah, you did good work. It's a good find.
Well, to move the process along, I'd like to propose a footprint that we could look at, and then doesn't have to, you know, just a starting point.
Okay.
But we sit and put it off for next week. We'll do it next week. So my recommendation is that, and I'll do it by streets, since it overlays a couple business districts.
Can we go to the map that was the very last slide that has the map?
Yeah, I don't think you'll be able to see the streets.
Okay.
We'll start.
Unless you want to point it out.
Well, we would start. This is the proposal to start with for the starting discussion. Start at I and go up to the RA district on 4th Avenue South. Take that over to the B2 district. Include the B2 district. Then come down to the B1. Then take Fort Fisher Boulevard, which is the RA3 district, and add that to the overlay. So that would be the basic starting point for the footprint. That captures about 5 or 6 businesses that are medium to larger size hotels that are not in the B1.
Are you taking that all the way to Avenue M?
N. I'm sorry, yes.
Thank you.
But like I said, it's a starting point. Mm-hmm. Get something down, and then we can discuss it and the pros and cons of that.
Could you put together a map for our next meeting?
Yep.
For that? Okay, just so we can have the map up there. Because inevitably, we're going to have a map that shows the overlay, too. So.
Okay. So that's... Okay. We'll do.
Is there any further discussion? And what I'd be glad to do, because I really got into this research, actually, actually maybe come in and put the next meeting with a recommended set of design standards that seem... Again, I'm not going to create these. I'm a big fan of cutting and pasting. I'm not going to, you know, redesign the wheel. Find some pretty good models out there and come in with some maybe recommended design standards that we could, again, as a starting point for discussion. So, you know, we could have a map in terms of what the overlay would look like. I'll come in with some design standards. We'll have council kind of look at the COA versus the SUP process, looking at Raleigh. And there's a number of other things related to that. Obviously, this has to go into code. It's got to be established by the town council in terms of the board that would be responsible. There's a whole bunch of other things out there, too. There's a number of different steps. and council can come back on that. Any other recommendations or comments? I think we're moving along on this, which is good.
COA sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds like
be honest, I had never heard of the COA process until I got into this, but it is without question the standard way of looking at character preservation overlay districts is through the COA process.
Oh, John, did you have any comments on?
No, sir.
Okay.
All right, unless there's any further discussion, we'll move to our next item, which is Chapter 19 Text Amendment and Associated Consistency Statement to add SIC Code 7999. And golf cart rentals to permitted uses in the B1 district. And let's go ahead and turn this over to council. I think you would take the lead on this.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. In your packet, you should have red line and black line proposed amendments to the 19243 permitted uses in B1, and also Chapter 19, Appendix A, where we extract the SIC code. Well, actually, we're going to insert a new SIC code. And then on Appendix B, I think that I have to double check. I did this for once. I did it ahead of time, and I can't remember exactly what I did. But if you look at 19243 red line, you'll see that we added a new subsection 26. I don't know if you want to get it. If you can't find it, let us know. We'll try to get it on the screen. Do you all see the red line for 19243?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. If you keep turning, there'll be a red line probably four pages later for Appendix A. And what we did was you already had 7999 in the Appendix A, but we've inserted golf cart rentals in there. And then if you go another two pages more, you'll see Appendix B, conversion table. We need to insert into the alphabetical index golf cart rentals, ellipsis 7999. The numerical index doesn't require an amendment, because 7999 is already indexed in there. A lot of work to cover all the bases, but an abundantly simple set of proposed amendments. I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have.
And the whole purpose of this is then that would require specifically golf cart rentals would require a special use permit.
Yeah, I should say, if you go back to the 19243 copy, red line or black line, you'll see that 26 golf cart rentals not only has the SIC code in parentheticals, but also the S indicating the special use permit. Again, this was commission's recommendation for future uses coming in like this, so that your ordinance has a little more clarity than it did before. I'll be glad to take any questions. Behind the Appendix B paper is the proposed consistency statement.
I just one real quick question for John. This is specifically dealing with permitted use in the B1 district. Are there any other districts that have sufficient vacant lots where this could come in outside the B1?
Not that have any kind of use that is similar to it.
Okay, so this should take care of golf cart rentals in Kiri Beach, essentially, through the B1. Okay.
Is there a limitation about how many golf carts we're talking about?
If there's any golf carts, the SUP would allow us to look at that. And again, as council said, then we can put parameters on that particular activity through this special use permit process.
Okay. What about the use of those golf carts? You know, tourist or resident use versus a golf cart taxis.
I think that's part of the SUP process as well, and in addition, motor vehicle laws.
Yeah, that's part of, when we get to the special use permit, we can go through that, right?
Again, this is just covering someone coming in the future wanting to rent golf carts in D1. It's a future, you're looking ahead.
Are there any further discussion on this? Does somebody want to make a motion? Do we need to separate the motion for the consistency statement from the, yeah, okay. So, somebody want to make a motion for the recommended amendments to Chapter 19?
So moved.
Again, what you're recommending is forwarding them on to council with a favorable recommendation.
Right.
Second.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Opposed? None. Somebody want to make a motion to for the associated consistency statement to add SIC code 7999.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Yeah, it passes.
All right, thank you.
New business. This is the special use permit application from Sun Fun Rentals. So, again, last time this was an application for the special use permit. John, this is probably you're the lead on this one, I think, aren't you?
Yes, sir. So, you should have before you several different documents. And they all have to do with Sun Fun Rentals and a special use permit application to operate a golf cart rental and sales area right beside the. Sorry, I'm trying to get to it on the screen. Right beside the gas station in downtown Cary Beach. Sheila Embler is here right now. She is, her and her husband are owners of this business. But you should have in your packet an appointment of agent from the owner of the property naming the Emblers as authorized agents to make this application. You should also have a land lease agreement from the owner of the property to the Emblers. Have a cover letter from Sun Fun Rentals detailing the business plan. And then you should also have a special use permit application and the pertinent information in that application also. And finally, a site plan outlining what they've got planned that meets the requirements of Section 19-82 of ordinances that have to deal with special use permits and what those site plans should have on the site plan requirements. As has been said several times tonight so far, P&Z is the first entity to review this. Town Council follows. They use the quasi-judicial process and their approval area. But prior to that, planning and zoning may include conditions which ensure that property use will be harmonious with the area and will meet the intent of this ordinance. So, keep that in mind as Ms. Embler makes the presentation to you guys, and she should be prepared to answer any questions that you may have. And I'm going to also pull up the ordinance so you guys can be looking at it.
So you're pulling up 1982
C8B? I'm sorry?
Are you going to pull up 1982 paragraph 2, subsection A through D?
Yes.
And Chairman, John is going to get on the screen the standards that when this application goes to council, the applicant will have to prove by substantial competent material evidence that A through D under paragraph 2 have been met in addition to whatever else the chapter 19 requires in a quasi-judicial hearing. And again, council has the discretionary authority to impose reasonable conditions. Your all's function, just like we did with the proposed text amendments, is to review this and report onto council and recommend any conditions you think are appropriate. But what I want to point out is, in your special use permit application that Mr. Batson has presented, starting on page 2, if you look at the bottom of page 2, you'll see general conditions. You'll see paragraphs 1, 2, and on the following page 3 and 4. These equivalent to what 1982 requires and is the applicant's response to those requirements. So that may help you in reviewing the matter. Thank you.
Okay, do you have a presentation at all?
Just some basic stuff.
Do you want to maybe kind of do the basic presentation before we get start asking questions and everything?
So, sure.
Okay, great.
First of all, thanks for your time. I just wanted to highlight a few things that's already in your packets. Most of you know we started in business here in about, 2014. And we do golf cart sales, rentals, and service. And then we also work with 4x4s and scooters and on the rentals. And we started the taxi business last year. When we looked at 2019, trying to figure out what we needed to do to improve for our customer, the one thing that kept coming back was Curry Beach. Our business down here has really grown, both with residents and with tourists. And it's just, we wanted something to make it a little more convenient for them so they didn't have to travel all the way to Carolina Beach to pick up a golf cart. So that's really why we started looking to see if there was somewhere we could go here. We wanted to try to find an area that would work with the business district and that would comply to all the ordinances and wouldn't really affect its surroundings. So that's one reason why we had a tendency to go toward that location there on Fort Fisher Boulevard South. It just seemed to fit. It's already a parking lot, so that part was typical for the location, and it gave us enough room to comply with the ordinances, the setbacks and the barriers and things like that, so that we could fulfill everything to fit into the harmony of Curry Beach, because that's what we wanted to try to do. We are looking mainly to have a location where a rental or a resident can come and pick up in season. They can book online or they can rent there on site. And it would operate 7 days a week on May through September, October. And it would be open from around 9 to 5. And then in the off season, it would just operate on warm weekends. And it would be from like a 10 to 4 time. And it would also be a staging area for the taxi carts just to be able to charge the batteries so they can do pickups here easier and more conveniently. And that's what we're looking at, is just a way to service this community better, because you guys have become a big part of our business and we just want to try to do it better by you. So that's why we're looking at the location down here. We want to keep it in accordance to everything, and we don't want to disrupt the surroundings. So with it being already a parking lot, we're just basically wanting to turn it into parking for golf carts. So
I only had one question. I was a little confused because the application says rentals. John mentioned sales. You mentioned sales. Do you plan on selling golf carts in this lot too?
That's an avenue that we would like to go down. The primary focus is on the rental side of the business. But, you know, that's an option if that's a possibility.
I'm going to open it up to the commission.
Yeah. When you say taxi cabs, mm-hmm. all your taxi cabs will be carts?
Yes, they're all about carts.
Okay.
Yes.
So they would be motor vehicles under Curry Beach, licensed, insurance, inspected. Yeah.
All of our vehicles are DOT certified.
Okay, now you're into regulations for the drivers. because now they're a motor vehicle and a public convenience taxi cab. Now, have you considered that also?
The taxi drivers comply with the regulations for the state for getting drug tested and background checks, and they have to have a taxi driver's license.
Okay, yeah. All right, thank you.
Does, now, Wilmington, I believe, has a medallion process for taxis. Is that correct? You know, a lot of cities have a medallion because they have to pay taxes. Each taxi cab has to pay a tax. And
right.
Stuff like that. But Carolina Beach doesn't have a medallion process.
Don't.
Okay.
Chairman, I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
Ma'am, do you have rules and regulations that your cab drivers have to follow? Are they written down anywhere?
Yes, they have a set of certifications and regulations they have to follow.
You might want to include that when this matter comes before council.
Okay.
And Chairman, I misspoke about something, and I want to correct that. It's not your job to recommend approval or disapproval because it's a quasi-judicial hearing at the next level, and they need to make that decision based solely upon the evidence presented. Your job is to determine if it's consistent with those four standards or not.
Are there other questions from the... I have a couple more, but I want to just open it up for everybody else.
Are there any issues with the utility shed, which, if I read the fine print, says a premier portable building? And so is that like a mobile office kind of thing, and what is it going to look like?
Yeah, do you have any facades of what, you know, what that building's going to look like?
You might want to include that next time around, too.
Okay. Yeah, this is an example of some things that we're looking at, and we're more than willing to abide to anything that you guys would like us to have in the building.
John, what are the regulations for a temporary building like this in the B1 district? I mean, it's, you know, I think that's one of the things that we're all kind of struggling on is what, I mean, this is a, bringing our trailers, plop it down and...
It'll have to be tied down and engineered to the 140 mile per hour wind zone. Additionally, the Emblers have explained to me that they will not be receiving the public in this building. Mm-hmm. And so what you'll see is one person in that building at any given time. So this doesn't really cover not allowing a building that cannot be moved at any given time. It does allow for accessory buildings.
You know, I'm kind of struggling because to me this is very similar to a mobile home, okay? And that mobile homes are not allowed in the B1 district. You know, we have a district where it is allowed, and it seems to me that technically, no matter what you call it, it's still a mobile home, and it's bolted down like a mobile home and stuff. But I just wondered if this particular type of structure is even allowable within the B1 district.
Well, one of the things you might want to consider is the applicant's flexibility on the structure and whether or not a structure you would find more compatible would be to your liking. I'm thinking of the temporary buildings that you see, sometimes rented along the highway, smaller buildings, and then you kind of see them in car washes too, where they, you know, issue the payment and run the car and all.
I'm still struggling as to whether this type of building is allowable in Beacon District. I mean, regardless of whether we think this is a good idea or not, just is the structure allowed within, because if we're going to make a recommendation to council, it's got to be consistent with the underlying zoning for the B1 District. And I'm still struggling, and help me, John, or council, as to whether technically a mobile home, you know, a mobile type of structure like this, is even allowable within the B1 district.
Chairman, what I'm saying is, we'll look at accessory building in a minute, But one of the conditions you might want to, if a mobile home is not allowed and you all move forward thinking that it's otherwise consistent with those standards, then one of the conditions you might want to suggest to council would be an accessory building that would be allowable in that district and not the mobile home that's currently being presented. Definition for accessory building, subordinate building, the use of which is incidental to that of the principal building on the same parcel or the use on the parcel. So it meets the definition. I just don't know, I don't recall how 243 or how the B1 requirements deal with accessory building.
It actually is not one of the permitted uses there. So what the ordinance doesn't specify is what kind of building you actually have to be there. And I think the ordinance relies on the building code for that jurisdiction.
243.1, does that cover it? Accessory use is clearly incidental?
No, sir, I don't believe so.
And you said something that this would not be where you would receive customers, but where are you receiving customers?
They would just be coming in to pick up their golf carts. So they would be out in the parking lot area, in the little parking area. They would come in and...
So no cover from rain or sun or...
Well, it's a quick process.
I want to know.
Yeah. So they would just come in and sign their paperwork and they would be off in their car.
So that's just going to be at a desk on a concrete slab?
It's going to be on the iPad.
So somebody will just be sitting there all day coming in and out of the shed, okay?
Yeah. Kind of like Hertz, when you come up with a rental car, you'll get out, they meet you, you sign your pad, and then you're off. Same concept.
Where's the maintenance going to take place for these vehicles?
It'll be in our shop in Carolina Beach. We have a full garage back there where we'll service. And what we'll do is all of our rentals are on a computer program called CheckFront. And they come in and they'll cycle. And ever so many cycles, they cycle out. They go into the service department, they're serviced, and then they cycle back in. So it's an automatic process where they're pulled. And then every time a car comes in, the person that's working the lot checks the water in the batteries, the air in the tires, and goes through all of the DMV pieces to make sure they're all working properly and before it's released. And if he finds an issue, then he'll call for us to switch out the cart. We'll bring him a new one, and we take that one in the shop.
Thank you.
Excuse me. What would be the ratio of the golf carts going to be used for tourism as opposed to the taxi portion of it? How?
80% of it will be tourist. Okay. Last year, on our rentals, we rented out about 1,500 carts last summer, and I would say 20% of them came to Curry Beach.
Okay, here's one other question. You have a stellar year, and supposedly, let's say the 80-20 ratio, you have a demand that's greater than what you have. Do you pull down vehicles from Carolina Beach?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got, we have 6 delivery trucks and trailers. We actually service golf carts down from here to Ocean Isle. So we have delivery drivers that are constantly running routes. And that's what we'll do is, say for example, prime week would be July 4th. All the carts are out July 4th. They're in a constant rotation. And so what we would do is we would stage ahead. And if we've got 40 carts that needs to be picked up in Curry Beach, we will stage them out pickup times, and then a driver will rotate the carts in if they're needed.
So at a given time, a stellar day like July 4th weekend, you could have 20, 25 carts at this location down here?
That would be cycling through this location.
Chairman, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Why do you need a structure on the, you know, the parking lot?
Basically, the only reason we were wanting it was on hot July days. That first person that's manning it. It gives them somewhere to go to get in out of the heat.
But in theory, they could sit in a chair under an umbrella, right?
They could, in theory, yes. You're exactly right.
Because I think the use of a structure is under B1 is a consideration.
While we're kind of thinking about that, number 10 on your signage, it says a small, smart sign. Are you talking about a digital sign there?
No, just something that's nice, concise, and just gives the information, but it's not over the top or anything.
Okay, well, smart sometimes refers to a digital type. Okay, because
yeah.
That's not allowed in Caribbean.
Yeah, okay. No, that's not.
So it's a non-changeable type of sign.
Right.
Okay.
I think when you go to council, you need dimensions of that sign too.
Well, it's understood that whatever signage they want has to
be approved.
Well, you know, again, this is a little bit more unusual because this is a temporary building. So, you know, in our sign ordinance, what would be allowed on a parking lot for a sign?
So, and speaking with Dean so far, we're talking about putting a sign on the building itself. So it will be limited to 15% of the facade.
Okay.
I have the definition of building pulled up on our ordinances right now.
Can you make it larger?
I don't want it.
So we've excluded containers, I noticed. So that's good.
Yeah.
All right, so that's the definition of a building, but what's allowed in the B1?
Okay, hold on a second. Once again, remember what the B1 is. It's a business district.
Mm-hmm.
Building code picks up.
Well, those are uses.
That's correct.
Buildings kind of implied because a bank finance company needs a building, but you can look through the rest of B1 and not find anything about the building.
But I think you could safely assume that everything on that list, excluding maybe parking lots, is going to be in a building.
Well, I think the issue of whether it can be a temporary building, because my impression, again, when I look at this, I'll come back if I've already said it, is that these look like mobile homes. That's brought in. And my understanding is a mobile home, if we think of that, is only allowed in one zoning area and it's not the B1.
But again, you could condition your recommendation on a different type of building other than what's being presented. If they're saying, hey, we want to put a mobile home, and you say, hey, I like everything about it except the mobile home, then we find you're consistent, but we're going to suggest the condition of not getting a mobile home, but instead a building.
Do we have any other temporary buildings in the B1 district? I'm thinking about that. Shoot.
You have any number of freezer type facilities behind the restaurants.
Behind the restaurant, but nothing servicing a retail. I forgot the name of it. The ice cream hamburger place.
Beach Burger.
What's that?
Well, that's.
Is that pole constructed?
What are you talking about?
The Beach Burgers. Is that?
That's a permanent building.
That's a permanent building. Okay.
That is a permanent building, yeah.
All right.
One other question on the carts. And I'm sorry to be a stickler on it, but so all your carts. And your whole fleet are licensed?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're in Carolina Beach, that's what worried me.
All of our, when we went into business, actually insurance-wise, it was much better for us to DOT tag all the cars.
Okay, because that worried me how you were going to keep track of what. Okay, good.
They're all
that's
tagged.
Good. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. John, does Chapter 19 make a distinction between temporary buildings and otherwise? I didn't see.
definition is over 32 feet, and this wouldn't be over 32 feet.
Well, it's the chassis and the wheels.
Yeah.
Where they're looking at buildings, they got another golf cart. How many do you plan to store here at any one time, or do you not know?
We don't know for certain.
Is there a max that you know you can't store it, you wouldn't be able to store it?
It's going to depend on just the positioning.
Where you have six carts and two, six seaters and two?
Yeah, we have six seaters and four seaters. Yeah.
So the perimeter of the existing lot is 100 feet by 40 feet, am I correct?
Yeah, that sounds correct.
How much is it?
100 feet by 40 feet.
It's a lot, right?
Yeah.
The lot.
The lot that she's going to secure.
Right.
So there is a limitation that you can't have carts on
right.
That.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, in the off-season, you're not using this as storage?
No.
Okay.
No, in the off-season, we pull all of our carts back in.
So on weekends,
side.
You just bring them down as
they're needed. Counselor, when we do a special use permit, can we put as one of the conditions that the approval only extends a certain amount of time, such as 5 years, and they need to come back? And
you grant a special use permit, it runs with the land.
So it'd be a lease?
So it would technically be in perpetuity, as long as the lease could be continued.
It would be, until, let's look at 1982 instead of trying to remember what it says.
Subsection 4, unless expired or discontinued,
yeah,
the special use permit shall be perpetually binding upon the property unless substantially changed or amended as provided for in this section.
One question I had, are you all going to use it for year round?
We'll use it for seasonal, except for, like I said, on nice weekends we'll open,
Like in, so it's not, you're not going to shut down after Memorial Day, there may be nice weekends in November, December, January.
Right, that we've, and it too is going to depend on, like around Christmas when it gets busier on the island, if we see a lot of carts are being scheduled for pickup during that time, then we might, open for that Saturday for them to get their carts picked up and brought back.
And it looks like your lease is for 1 year with options to renew and a 30-day notice to terminate with or without cause?
Yeah.
Do you have the pictures of the buildings again?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sure. So, are you putting a fence up between Sam's parking lot and your property, or just?
It's the.
I see a demarcation line, but I don't see any barrier.
Yeah, it's like a pole and corded barrier on
it's
the
roped.
Okay, so it'd be roped off.
Right.
Okay.
Chairman, let me read a few things to you. In the application, where they indicate how the use will not endanger the public health or safety, the applicant states the area will be contained by a natural barrier and a rope barrier. Surface will be filled with crushed rock. Indicated the special use meets all required conditions. Proposed area will follow ordinances
up there.
And signage and barrier requirements. Indicate how the proposed use will not injure the value of adjoining property. Kiri Beach tourists and residents have expressed a desire for a more convenient location. Areas already designated and utilized for the public, it will fit with the current surroundings. And then finally, indicate that the location and character of the use will be in harmony with the area. Lot already designated for public parking. Portion we are using will flow with the parking concept. Only difference is that our area caters only to golf carts. In your site plan, is that the whole lot lot, or you, does it end up that you're sharing a lot with somebody?
Just the portion that we're renting, that site plan shoots that entire portion.
And there's no overlap, they're not going to, nobody's going to park in your area?
No.
Could, who's flipping through the pictures here?
I am.
Oh, you are. Could you go back a couple, one beyond that one? That's the most attractive one there.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't look like a barn. It doesn't have the big gate in front of it. You say,
well, the other thing is that once we allow, Mr. Chairman, once we allow this, what's the, you know?
So that one.
You're allowing it by special use, not by right use.
That's right. Okay, correct.
Is that the one that? No, that's not that one. That's not that one there.
No, the one at the top.
Oh, the one at the top.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one? Yeah, that's certainly the nicer looking of all the ones on there. That's the nicest looking one. Would you all agree to that? The one on the top, not
the one circle.
One circle. Yeah, the others just look like sheds.
Or barns,
yeah.
We could use a shipping container.
No.
No, that's prohibited now. That's prohibited.
That's what I'm worried about.
We can readdress that.
That's a cabin drawing out.
Yeah.
Yeah. My recommendation is to recommend approval or recommend to town council that they approve this, subject to a couple conditions. One is that they present to the town council what the signage would look like specifically. Second is that it has to, it's the sea cabin, however you want to identify that one. On the premier advertisement, the sea cabin. Those would be my two conditions, the recommended conditions. Does anybody else have any recommended conditions?
Just something for discussion. We, since it is, would it be practical, say, you know, not over 20 carts, or because it is a...
Did you determine how many carts does it?
Well, so that's the whole problem. So you have the 6-seater carts and the 4-seater carts.
Well, not to exceed the perimeter of the 100 feet by 40. Is that what you're saying?
Is your lot in Carolina Beach a similar size?
No. Our lots, we actually have 3 lots in Carolina Beach.
Right. I mean, hear from the rest of the commission, maybe it's really not a concern. I mean, that's the only other condition I can think of.
How many, the maximum that you would generally see parked there at any one time?
In our lots in Carolina Beach?
No, the one here that you envision. Because you're the expert in this area, so.
It's hard to say. And the reason why I say that is because you don't know, like in July, there are going to all be 6 passenger carts. Well, a 6 passenger cart, you can't get but so many in that lot at one given time. In the early June, we service more 4 passenger carts. Well, a 4 passenger cart will go, 2 can get in 1 6 passenger cart space.
Will your lot have designated spaces for the golf carts?
For parking on the golf carts? Yeah, we'll have designated.
So it just won't be a jumble of carts.
Right.
They'll be organized.
That's right. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, it'll be organized.
If we, a circumstance on an extremely busy weekend, that you have more carts that you cannot put into your facility, would you be able to transport them out to your place on that given day so you don't violate that?
What we'll do is, if we feel like that we've got too many carts running through there, then I'll move pickups to Carolina Beach, or we'll divert more to being delivered. So, yeah, we'll shift them one way or the other.
Okay.
Chairman, I have another question. Not trying to put you on the spot, but just so we all do our homework and end up on the same page, are there any things that you've experienced in Carolina Beach that this commission needs to know about so that we can look at that ahead of time instead of reacting to it when it happens?
Say problems or anything like that you've had?
To be honest with you, we actually have had, for the amount of carts that we've moved, we've had very little issues. I mean, there's always going to be some crazy hiccup, but for the amount of flow that comes through, nothing really has been that out of the way or that big of a problem. One thing I can say, we built slowly. When we started in the rental business of golf carts, we started with 6 carts. And we went the next year to 25 carts. And then the next year we jumped to 50 carts. So every year we've increased, but we've tried to work through it to where we kind of could see what we needed to change and how we needed to fix things instead of just jumping into it head first. So we tried to hit the ground slowly so that we didn't run into a lot of problems. One thing that we implemented too that's helped us a bunch is we've got a brochure and it's the do's and don'ts. And we list out every tiny little detail that you do not do on a golf cart. And that we stress strongly that it is driving a car and you should treat it as a car. And that has helped us immensely.
A couple of more questions. Have you had any property damage or injury issue?
We had a 2 teenage little boys, well, not little boys, they were 14. Snuck downstairs and got on the golf cart their parents had rented and snuck off on it. And we actually got the call before the parents did because one of our customers saw them. And we were going up there and they went around a curve too quick and flipped the cart. The boys jumped off. They wasn't hurt.
That was all there.
And the cart got damaged.
Is there, oddly enough, I don't know much about golf carts at all, but how do you need to secure the carts on the lot when there's nobody there? Are they easily started? How does all that play out?
Well, the golf carts have a generic key switch, but our carts have, several of them have custom switches. And then they've also got GPS trackers on them. And so if one does happen to walk off, we can track it.
John, do we have taxi cabs in Curry Beach?
There are taxi cabs that operate in Curry Beach, yes, sir.
I saw something on the news once about a little brouhaha in Carolina Beach with the taxi cab people. How did that, can you advise council and commission on this and how it played out?
Yeah, what happened was the state ordinance on taxi cabs says that you have to have a meter. But it's up to the town's discretion on how that works if you display the money that you're charging. And we were only on the island. We definitely weren't going over the bridge. And so they determined that on the golf cart, since it was only on the island, that we could charge a flat rate. Some of the cabbies got upset, felt like that it wasn't being treated fair. So what the town did is they said, fine, anybody, as long as you display one set amount on the island, you don't have to run a meter. But if you go over the bridge in Wilmington, you have to run a meter. So that's how the town, as long as it's a fair amount and it's displayed very fully for the customer when they get in, then they don't have to run in.
This is more maybe for Mike and Councilman Whitley. On a busy weekend, you're going to be right there at the stoplight for Kay and Michaels, and your carts are going to be coming out onto 421.
No, they won't. They'll be coming out on 3rd Street.
Not by this.
Not by the site plan.
Not by this.
All right, so they're going to open up that fence then?
Well, no, and that's my recommendation, that we open it up. Because that could be prime for disaster, especially with people who don't have golf carts. They hit the gas, they don't realize how fast they go right. That is my thing, is can we somehow get it to where the exit from this point is up on 3rd Street, at least give, so it's not in the middle of a huge traffic problem to begin with.
I'm about to wait on that.
I mean, you could certainly put that as a condition.
I'm just bringing it up.
Right turn only be exercised here?
You could do for carts only. I guess you could put signs in like
turn only. You can come out of this here. Right turn only.
Property to get out.
Okay.
I would leave that. I would talk to our police chief and get his recommendation on that. I think that needs to be resolved also. Because you've been down here, I'm sure.
That's where the building's going to be.
That's going to be on the 4th of July weekend.
Here's their recharging stations.
That could be tough. So that would be...
So is there any other way you can exit other than on Fort Fisher off that property?
It would be out the back.
It's a parking lot right by Quickie Mart.
Yeah, we're right by that parking lot.
So they would go right out to 3rd Avenue.
But there's no controlled parking back there, so therefore people just park there. There's no guarantee you're going to get out.
No.
Remember, it's not their property.
Well, it's Sam's property. He could allow them access. He could tell them it's okay for them to do it. Yeah. And it's a parking lot. So I don't know. I'm just saying that to me seems like something that...
Well, that's why we're talking about. These are the conditions we can either set. Right. It does
at least right turn only out of there for a golf cart at a minimum, at a maximum, have them go out on 3rd Avenue so they coming down by the light to flow into traffic.
Yeah, is that
I support the right?
Okay, so there we'll add a third condition to the two that I added, that right carts may only turn right onto Fort Fisher upon exiting the lot.
Right. Okay.
Another question. I see you have 8 charging stations. How long does it take to charge one of these carts?
If a cart is completely dead, it can take 8 hours. But what we do is we just keep them constant on the rotation of charge. So you're never charging a completely dead cart.
Okay. So the average charge is 2 hours?
Pick another. 2 to 2.5 hours, yeah.
Okay.
Council, I've been involved in a number of special use permits, conditional use permits, and a lot of times there's always a condition that they maintain appropriate insurance and that sort of thing as part of the condition. Would that be appropriate in this particular case to put that, or is that already assumed?
I don't think you want to assume anything.
Okay. Yeah. Then as a fourth condition, I would say that the operator maintain appropriate insurance and satisfying required regulations associated with the business.
The applicant maintain.
Or if you have better wording for that.
Yeah, I want to make sure I understand. The applicant, not the person renting the car.
Right.
The applicant will maintain adequate insurance to cover all, yada, yada, yada. And.
We want to protect the town of Curie Beach from accidents that might happen.
Couple of things. Let me capture your first the condition you just expressed. I got the first part of it, maintaining adequate insurance. I missed the second part of it.
The second has to do with appropriate regulations regarding the taxicab drivers and that sort of thing.
State laws.
Yeah.
Now look, the third point you raised is indemnification.
Mm-hmm.
Are you suggesting a condition that the applicant enter into an indemnification and hold harmless agreement with the town? I mean, that could be simple, but I just want to know if that's where you're coming from.
What would you recommend as counsel?
That they have the adequate insurance, that they produce a certificate of insurance annually showing the coverage and with the town named as an additional named insured thereon, and that the applicant sign a hold harmless indemnification in one-page document.
Okay.
Yeah, we do that now, so that's not a problem.
Okay, so that'll be the fourth condition?
Yeah.
All right.
On that, it's like Hertz, Avis, and everything, you can purchase that additional insurance coverage on that. Is that something that you offer?
What we do is they have to bring proof of insurance with them.
Which was just mentioned, yes.
And we carry $1 million policy on the rental side. And then we carry $1 million policy because I'm certified by the federal government to vend golf carts. So I carry $1 million policy with that. And then we have a umbrella policy too. So we're insured to the hills.
Carolina Beach named as an additional insurer under mm-hmm. those, all three?
General
liability and umbrella?
Yep. So if that's not a problem, because we would do the same.
Thank you.
Do you plan on bolting? I'm always worried about hurricanes. Rather than just dropping this on there, you plan on bolting this somehow to the ground?
John said it had to be.
It has to be. Okay. So that doesn't need to be a condition. That's already assumed.
Right.
Okay.
That's those 40-mile-an-hour winds.
Okay.
No propane tanks.
Chairman, I don't want to micromanage this like we were writing a contract. I mean, these conditions are good, but we're starting to drill down kind of deep.
I would disagree. I've seen special use permits with 30 to 40 different conditions associated with it. And that's exactly why we go through this process.
I defer to your experience.
How about landscaping? Any sort of landscaping?
Yeah, you'll have, if you look on the site plan, we're going to have some beds, flower beds. Here at the entrance, there'll be annual flowers. And then on the barrier between the lot and the wall to where the convenience store is, there's
going to
be some shrubs along there.
Okay. All right.
Sam.
So I made a motion to approve with four conditions.
Second.
Okay, there's a second.
Let's confirm what they are. Present signage conforming to Chapter 19 to Council when Council hears the application.
Yes.
Madam, if you could make sure you include the premier advertising in whatever you present to council, but the C cabin would be the BZC recommends the C cabin on the premier advertising brochure as the allowable building. I've got designated parking spaces on the lot that will be used. Right turn only onto Fort Fisher when exiting the lot. Maintain adequate insurance, and I'll reword that, with a certificate of insurance naming the town under the general and umbrella liability and compliance with all applicable federal, state, local laws, statutes, rules, regulations, etc. Those are the five conditions that I've got. They may end up being six when I write them out. But.
Okay, so there's a motion that's been seconded with the five conditions. I did have a question before we vote. Lighting. What sort of lighting is going to be on there?
We are getting EWE Electrical to put in a power pole, and there will be a light mounted to the top of that power pole.
Is there any recommendation regarding the lighting?
Does your ordinance address lighting at all, Chapter 19? I don't know that.
What's the location on your plot?
Do you show that on the site?
It's right there above you. You can just point to it. I imagine it's going to be by your building.
I was looking to see if you put anything on.
As far as service comes in, I would assume it's going to be somewhere up in this area.
Oh, okay. Do
you plan on having this light on when you're not open?
Yes. Yeah. It'll be an automatic come on when the sun goes down.
One of the things that special use permits typically do is they do restrict lighting because you don't want kind of a floodlight, you know, that's bothering everybody, residents and all that sort of thing. I would, as and again, this would have to be approved by the second because we already have a second on this, but I would like to add a condition that the lighting be shown to town council, appropriate to not interfere with
location.
That's location appropriate and not interfere with residents and building, particularly if this is going to stay on all night. So is that okay with the second?
Yes, I'll take that.
Okay.
Before we vote, I have another question. What are the hours?
In season, we're there from 9 to 5.
So anybody, nobody can do anything after 5. They can't return a car, can't rent a car.
No. The only thing that would happen after 5 o'clock is if one of our taxi cabs needed to plug in.
So you're not going to have a
pull in and plug in.
So you're not going to have a gate or anything in front of there.
And the so you all hire the taxi cab operator?
Yes, they're employed by us.
And 5 o'clock, so they can continue to be. Don't forget those rules and regs, please. But the taxi cab operators can continue operating the taxi cab business after 5 because they don't need a lot other than charging.
Right. Yeah. They won't stay on the lot.
All right. So there's a motion. It's been seconded. Any further discussion? And so this is a motion that it be forwarded with the recommendations to town council for the next council meeting. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Aye. Okay, it's 4-1. It's 4-1.
I will 4-1. Who is the one?
Rita.
Pardon me?
It's 4-1. You're the one?
Yes.
Chairman, I'll draft up a report and let you and John and Kathleen see it. And if it's acceptable, you can sign it and give it to Ms. Avery, or Kathleen can give it to Ms. Avery.
Okay.
Now,
do special use permits require a consistency? I mean, there has to be findings, though, doesn't there?
I'll take care of that
okay.
document, but you don't need a consistency.
All right. Member items, and we'll talk about the next meeting in a second. Does anybody have any member items?
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
The only thing I believe that we have is on the next agenda, I believe we were going to have a broad discussion about whether we need to change our SIC codes, our permitted uses, so we specifically prohibit things in these various zoning districts. I think we had that discussion last time. So I'd like to put the...
I think you wanted input from council commission members as to what might possibly be recommended to include in that list.
Right. So let's make sure that's on the agenda for next time. Okay.
Chairman, I have a question because I just didn't keep up with it. I'm just curious what council's doing, if anything. I'm not taking a position one way or another. I'm curious where the topic of a moratorium has... Where is everybody on that?
We're going to discuss it at the April meeting, then we'll have a hearing in May.
Yeah. And again, you know, our recommendation 5-0 was to support a moratorium as we go through this process.
Okay. If you keep discussing it, it'll be over before we... 6 months.
I think we're going to move pretty fast on this. So. next meeting. John, what's your limits on May meeting?
Well, right now, planning on being on honeymoon.
Woo!
Okay, can you call in?
Even if I could, I would. So if you guys would like for me to be here, then if you want me
is
to
it,
be
is
here,
it all of May? It's all of May?
I'll be back on the 4th of May. So the following week would be fine. But right now, it's on schedule as May 1st.
I am only
and I will not be here on May 1st.
Monday, Tuesday, only days I'm available.
So
in the second week.
Second week, okay.
So I'll be out of place on May 1st.
Okay, so we're looking at the second week after May 1st.
May, that's 11th.
I'll be in California, so second week for the region.
For the whole week?
The second week's good for you.
So yeah, the 7th or 8th would be perfect.
7th or 8th? What day of the week are those?
Is that Monday or Tuesday?
Tuesday or Wednesday.
On Wednesday I'm booked. Okay, Monday, Tuesday I'm good.
Tuesday, is that the 7th?
I have a conflict on Tuesday. The 7th.
How about Monday?
No, might not be back.
Monday I'm good.
How about and Wednesday, who's gone?
I'm gone.
How about Thursday?
I'm gone for 8 days.
I'm gone Thursday and Friday for a graduation. You got the 14th or the 15th.
So what day is the majority of us here is the question.
It sounds like the majority, with the exception of you, is here on Wednesday.
Okay. Then I'll be excused, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that would be.
That's good.
Okay, so that's what
won't count.
What date is that? That's May
8th.
May 8th, 7 o'clock. All right, so there's a motion. I'll make a motion to have.
That's right. We had the gentleman who had the.
Will we be able to meet the requirements of submitting the documents for the council meeting? If we meet on the 8th?
I think it's.
Yeah, because we're not. We won't have the meeting until the 20th, so we'll be fine.
I think it's a 1 week notice, isn't it?
Yeah.
I believe it's a 1 week notice. Okay.
Give me a check, one second, I'll check.
Here's the historic view, right? You know, I'm going to look at it. 110 pages.
I thought it was a week, but I could be wrong. Somebody said they were checking.
Right. We're waiting for this.
I'm checking.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. I thought John was checking. I could hear the wheels turning over there.
John's got all kinds of additional requirements now.
We're going to get this back to the lady.
There is no time limit on town council. They just have to review it within 45 days.
And I think for the notification to have it on the agenda is a 1 week period, if I remember right. All right, so I'll move to have our May meeting on May 8th at 7 o'clock. Is there a second?
I second that.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Would anybody like to make a motion to adjourn?
So move.
I'll second. Okay. Aye, you got there before me. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Very good. Thank you.
It's
Eden. Okay. A little historic. 110 pages.